This is a CNA podcast.
Singapore's breathing easier with the further easing of restrictions, allowing more to return to the office this week. But if you look back, we know two things have kept us going while we were all stuck at home. The ability to order food online and all the on-demand entertainment we could binge watch. The world over, millions have downloaded and streamed movies, plays and sitcoms. All of this has kept us sane in an unusual, unprecedented time in human history. For this, we have to thank the artists, directors, writers, actors, production crew who gave us something special to hang on to after a long day at work or tough week confined to our apartments. Today, we talked to two Singapore filmmakers on what it's been like on the other side of the screen, their struggles, successes, and how far passion can go when filming is all but shut for business. Welcome to Heart of the Matter with me, Lin Su Ling. Duan Fu is a veteran filmmaker who's produced independent films like The Road Less Traveled and Return to Pontianak. His latest project is Singapore's first monster feature film, Circle Line. Q Lin is a full-time freelance filmmaker. Previously a visual effects artist in London, he moved back to Singapore in January 2020 and has since directed the short film Uncle Goose Waits for a Phone Call. Hey, so Duan and Q, welcome to our podcast. Well, I guess the chance that I have with filmmakers here, what's the last good movie you've watched since the pandemic hit and what did you enjoy about it? Duan, why don't you start with you?
In the cinema, right?
I don't know. Is it in the cinema? You tell me.
Wow. I think they are few and far between if you were to talk about good. But I would say that my last film was a local film. I watched it at Projector. Appreciative that Projector, you know, still screens Independent World Cinema. So I watched a film called Malam, which is a film that's directed by a local filmmaker, Leonard Yip. So Malam was my last good film, maybe around a month or two.
Wow, that's a long time.
Yeah.
What about you, Q? What was the last good movie that you watched and why did you like it?
The last time I was in the cinema was with my mom a month ago, and we were the only ones in there.
Oh.
Because she was quite afraid of the virus, of course. So they insisted that we should go. But we watched a Disney movie, Jungle Cruise. It was okay. It was nice.
A blockbuster.
A blockbuster with just me and my mom. Quite romantic. Recently, I saw a really, really good movie from 1995. I'm not sure, John, whether you've seen it before. It's called Salam Cinema.
Oh, of course. Wow.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. It's I don't want to spoil anything for anyone, but it is an Iranian film. It's about thousands of people queuing up outside a film studio trying to audition to become extra in the movie. And it's a mix between fiction and documentary. It's pretty fascinating.
Actually, that reminds me. You know, Duan, you have a film called Circle Line starring Jessica Liu and Nathaniel Ng. And it's Singapore's first monster movie. It's a big deal. And, you know, you promoted it at the Singapore Comic Con in December 2019. And then COVID happened. So tell us what happened to it.
Circle Line is Singapore's first monster movie creature feature, as we would say. They're kind of like a preview in Comic-Con in 2019, because we were going to release it in 2020 on Mother's Day. But then a bigger monster called COVID-19 hit us. So we are kind of like backlogged to release it. I'm hoping to release it either end of this year or maybe early next year. Still on the cards, still rallying the support from distributors and the cinemas. Let me share very candidly, there's a certain pecking order to what you watch in the cinema. Apart from COVID, we also have a lot of Hollywood films that are waiting in line to be released. And then after that, it's the Chinese films and then the Korean films. And then you get the local films. And there are many, many local films that were made within the past, I guess, 2 years, Circle Line included, that are waiting for their release. So, you know, you guys out there, yeah, support local, watch Circle Line, Singapore's first monster creature feature, coming to a cinema near you.
But why not release it in 2020? You mean there was no chance of that happening at all?
No, there was no chance of that happening in 2020. Once we missed our slated release date because of the pandemic, we have to also be understanding to the distributors and the exhibitors. It was pretty chaotic because it's a huge gamble to actually say, I want to release my film during the pandemic, whether is it phase two or three, because you'll just never be able to almost guarantee seats. And with the cinema limitations of up to 50 people per cinema, if I'm not wrong, yeah, it's just a very, very hard game in terms of revenue.
I understand that the business dictates it, but why not release in 2020 when there are so many Singapore films that managed to? You know, there was Tiong Bahru Social Club, there was Number One, and then there was the Diam Diam era, which Jack Neo himself, the director, said that the delayed Hollywood releases actually gave his work more exposure. So in hindsight, wouldn't last year have been a good opportunity?
Yes and no. It's actually because these films were given the green light to be distributed. That's why other films like Circle Line and other Singapore films have to kind of take a backseat. It's really precisely because of how the business works in terms of which film is potentially going to garner that attention and which film do we want to kind of, okay, wait a minute, let's keep it. The decisions of what to watch on the big screen is really very, very calculated and very, very speculative. Every single film that is on screen, Tiam Tiam Era, what was the other one, Number One, and etc. It's a very calculated decision to put these films there. And again, they bore the risk of low box office.
You're talking about how calculated things are. It's quite new to me because I always stand from a content creator point of view, but I've never been a distributor or producer. Obviously, after the pandemic, there is a backlog of Hollywood film made between 2020 and 2021 waiting to come out. And everyone's just talking about, Dune 2021 hasn't been out yet. How can I come out and compete with
exactly.
it? Then I started realizing how calculated this is going to be. It's crazy.
I think any film that has been planned for the big screen, for a producer, it's really about the potential of what the big screen can bring, aside from the fact that it is about the visual and the audio experience in the cinema, which you will never get on TV or on streaming. The other aspect is really about, as a cinema film, you access the audience direct, you know, and that's something that film producers want and crave for. So we have to work with the distributor and the exhibitor to balance that off because they also want to maximize top dollar on what they want.
Although that being said, right, there have been a lot of big blockbusters like Black Widow, which had simultaneous release, not just in movie theaters, but also on streaming platforms. So surely that suggests that the math of this business is changing.
The math is changing, but the math also tends to favor the studios. Black Widow's release pattern can only be practiced because, hey, after all, it's the big mouse, right? It's really, really Disney. And with Disney's power and the empire, I think they can still make a substantial buck from it, lah. And agree totally, Suling, the release patterns are changing. But we just have to see from a very, very small fry point of view, right? What works best and basically bite the bullet lah. That's as calculative as it can be.
So let's bring Q into this conversation. What sway does a cinematic release hold today when given they don't seem very lucrative anymore, cinemas are not as packed? I mean, do you foresee that would change for a lot of filmmakers?
The change has already started. At least from my vantage point, to give a little bit of context, I think going to the cinema is what people call captive audience, where you are there, you watch the film, and generally you don't walk out. You are forced to watch without skipping. And obviously, contrasting that, when you're at home on a streaming platform or YouTube, for example, you have the power to skip through the content or to choose when to watch what and which part of it to watch. So with that, filmmakers have started to think about making films with that in mind, taking that into consideration. And practically what that means is when I'm making a film, I probably want to make sure that the first scene or the first 5 minutes of the film or something like that has enough to make sure the audience doesn't jump through it or turn it off. And I think that actually makes the concepts simple or easy to understand, accessible, rather than in the past when you go to a cinema, you have the opportunity to appreciate the entire film before making your mind up, before appreciating the entire story as a whole. So I definitely think that the change is already happening.
And also with COVID, filming cannot be done the same way anymore. And maybe that's a good thing because a lot of films are moving towards a virtual production model where cameras are controlled remotely, visual effects are applied instead of a lot of live production, while at the same time, production crew sizes are coming down. Both of you have filmed since the pandemic hit. What was the process like? You know, do you think it's killed the magic of movie making?
Wow, that's an interesting question. Q and I, we did, I guess you can say, the region's first drama comedy about bubble tea, right? It's also online now. It's called 1,000 Cups to Midnight. Mm. It was quite a good experience to shoot during the pandemic. But I think by the time we shot, we were quite well prepared in terms of embracing the hassle of, you know, the temperature checks and making sure social distancing and stuff like that. And I mean, we really played by the rules because we even informed the town council that we were shooting. The social distancing ambassadors came down and actually did a once over. Which I think, you know, from a producer's perspective, I guess for me, I'm quite accepting to the fact that, okay, hey, we are doing this in the age of the pandemic. I think we should really, really adhere to all the rules because you don't want to risk shutdown, right? Because once something happens to a single production unit, it will just affect the rest. That kind of responsibility and guilt should not be borne, lah, right? So we really adhere to everything. If you're talking about changes, I think we were more aware of things. So, you know, we would be around and then we'll be saying, hey, you know, social distancing, make sure, you know, even in the mise-en-scene and the staging, I think we also considered, but also we worked within the rules to actually have the correct kind of interaction for the stories.
Okay, so maybe just to poke a little bit, right? You guys paint a very rosy picture, but the reality is that COVID restrictions have hit people quite differently. And
absolutely,
Tom Cruise himself lost his temper when crew took his rules lightly. So it must be quite nerve-wracking when the film crew can be big. Doesn't it get tense? People haven't lost their cool at all?
I think I'll attribute that to the fact that we had a pretty good crew. I think everybody was quite considerate and sensible as far as when I visited the set, lah. But I think we were very aware of these things. Obviously, the larger the crew, the more inclination that you have disgruntled people or people who take things for granted. Thankfully, thank God, I don't think we had that problem. Again, because our crew size was rather small. Again, you know, budget allowing and stuff like that. But I think we managed to pull through with a certain level of consideration. But I have definitely heard of other circles that are quite disgruntled or quite impatient with it. But I think we did good.
Please don't.
Yeah, any behind the scenes sort of revelations about production and how tough it was?
One thing about Singaporean crew, because I used to live in the UK, so I experienced filming in the UK side as well. So the Singaporean crews are definitely more adaptable and always trying to make things work. Of course, there are always exceptions, but I can really attest, I've seen people work, you know, my peers, the crew, they can always make things happen. And I think filmmaking on set is already tough. So this is just another thing. The pandemic is just another thing. Because if it's not this, it's budget, it's location, it's the Singaporean sun that is always giving us harsh shadows, you know. And when the pandemic hit, a lot of people were talking about how we can still keep up with making productions happen while keeping everybody safe. And there are really, really crazy talks that we never considered before. Like, you cannot have two people let's say, do intimate scenes, whether it's touching or kissing, you know, because the virus could be spread.
No physical contact.
Yeah, it is highly discouraged, especially during circuit breaker. That was before the vaccine.
Oh, before testing was available.
Absolutely.
I see.
Before vaccine. Yeah. So then we say, okay, if you want to have kissing scenes, for example, okay, why don't you go and cast like a real life husband and wife as a couple? And that just reduced the options that we have by so much.
Wait, really? So you actually had to do that?
No, it was something that...
Oh, we didn't.
Yeah.
We considered,
yeah. Otherwise, you might have to just rewrite the scene. A lot of us, we shoot in HDB flats because that's the most common household that people live in. For a crew of 20, 30 to go into a flat to film, social distancing becomes impossible. So people started talking about, okay, the crew that are not needed for a particular scene can go and station themselves at the HDB flat next door. So when you rent a location, rent two units instead of one. Because one flat is not enough for 30 people to be in it while maintaining social distancing. When you start considering things like that, I think the budget just doubles, basically.
So why do you need so many people then?
That was the luxury that we absolutely took for granted. I mean, the film set is generally quite large. Easily you could have 20 to 40 people, depending on how big the scenes are. But right now, a lot of us are thinking, okay, we might have to start writing films where it's more chamber, where it's just really simple setup and really simple cast. Just one or two, you know?
You're suggesting that actually, with the pandemic, it's compromised what shows are able to bring across.
Absolutely. It's really about making do, making the best with certain limitations. To answer your question just now, Suling, about why are crews so large, right? Is that there is actually a lot to do behind the camera to coordinate and to ensure a certain level of quality execution, which is again why, you know, if you are to compare Korean film dramas and TV dramas or even Hollywood dramas, the crew can be like 60, 80 or even a few hundred. It's really because there's a lot of things going on behind the camera that has to be ensured so that things in front of the camera are of high quality. Maybe makeup. The makeup for the talent, the distance between where the camera is and where the talent is. If it was actually a longer distance, you probably need more coordinators. If it was really about having somebody to prep the makeup person who is with the main talent, that's another additional person. And what if the actual talent is, for example, somebody like Tom Cruise? Maybe he has his own preference of his own makeup artist. So that adds another person on the makeup department. And then if, let's say, you've got 20 zombies that have to be made up, right? You can't possibly hire just one makeup person to do that. I mean, okay, you can.
It'll take a long time.
Yeah, your shooting and your prep time will have to be increased. There's a lot going on behind the scenes to make that quality in front of the scene. This is actually a great segue. There is production value, and a lot of people take for granted because you must make do with less. But sometimes less, if it's not managed properly, will definitely affect production value. So people say, hey, why Singapore films don't look so good? Or why YouTube looks so cha-cha? And wow, why Hollywood films look so good? Yeah, it's because of production value. It's the people that you hire, the number of people that you hire, the extent of coordinating and liaising and managing work that goes on behind the scenes that is taken for granted. La.
Right now, if we have restrictions on the way films are shot, it also means that we have restriction on the kinds of stories that we can tell. And that basically halves the variety or the diversity of stories that actors can be part of. I think the number of film productions in Singapore is already relatively low compared to overseas. That means that they have even less to pick from, which might be a good thing or a bad thing. I'm not sure.
Can independent filmmakers survive? Because it sounds like what you're also alluding to is funding. And beyond government financing, what other sources do you have? Crowdsourcing?
Crowdsourcing.
Does that not work in Singapore?
It kind of still works, I guess.
It's possible.
Yeah, it's possible. I think filmmaking will never cease. I think it's really run by mad people like myself and Q. In these days, funding possibilities are always there. I think it's really about, I guess, nurturing an audience and having that audience to be committed to support the arts or our own stories.
Mm.
It is really about seeing ourselves on screen or what we feel for on screen and appreciating it lah. Do you want to see yourself on screen and laugh at yourself or cry at yourself and feel something, or do you just want to watch something that you can glaze over?
Yeah.
You know, I think that remit has always been there.
Do you both feel encouraged when Netflix and the big platforms, they picked up films like Shuckers? Do you sense that there is that support for local films on the ground?
I'm in the midst of preparing project, which means a lot of pitching and a lot of financing. And that means asking people to support, whether it's organization or individuals. When you're asking someone to support the film, especially right now, everyone's obviously suffering a lot of financial damage or restriction. We are much more careful as to what we support. That's for sure. But then there is the other factor, which is now that everyone's on streaming platforms, we have the chance to see more content from different places around the world. And so our selection of vocabulary, like film choices, have expanded, I think, especially over the last 2 years, because everyone's just on Netflix.
Which is good news or bad news because there's more competition?
Generally, it's good news. But there are two ways to look at it. One is, when I pitch a project, one of the most common producer's questions is, can you give me a reference film? I need to see that this thing has been done before somewhere else so that I know that it can work. If you're going to pitch a mystery crime drama, it is more effective I start to say, you know, this film will be a bit like this famous film, a bit like this other series. You're going to kind of have to help them understand what this film is going to look like.
Who's them here?
Financiers and perhaps...
any stakeholder, yeah, in fact.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But that's mind-boggling, though, because the most famous films, the most groundbreaking stuff don't have precedence. That is the whole point, no?
Exactly.
which is the conundrum that I think we face, because precedence, while it gives confidence, also reduces originality. Now I'm trying to pitch something that is quite original. But everyone is a little bit wary because they will give me the advice, you better do it well. Because if you don't do it well, the audience may not get it. People might not support you. It becomes a lot more stressful. Whereas if I start to pitch something that is a replica of something existing, people will get excited more easily.
I hate to ask this, but when you then think about how challenging it can be as an independent filmmaker, why not join the big production house that has the resources for mass marketing and distribution, that has the finances, the deep pockets to be able to fund these interesting ideas that you have? I ask because, you know, in Singapore, there are so many. There's the likes of Disney, Lucasfilms, Warner Media, but there's also MediaCorp, right?
I'll be candid to say it's really about, again, another very, very vague word. I guess the ideology an individual will follow or an individual will root for. A lot of independent filmmakers will still want to go out on their own, be it whether or not it's a unique voice or be it whether they want to be independent about how they run the show. It's great that the studios are here, but every big studio will definitely have their own agenda. To me, filmmaking is ideology, right? So every studio will have their own ideology that they want to protect and spread. So it really depends on whether or not you can subsume yourself to that or if you can kind of mind meld yourself to that particular studios, be it MediaCorp or Disney. This is not to say that big studios don't do good stuff. Big studios, in fact, should do better stuff and should have that responsibility to do outstanding stuff because of their resources. But again, storytelling being so subjective and markets being so sensitive, it's also a challenge for studios. They might have it easier, but I think the quest for originality and uniqueness for market share, it's a continuous challenge. They might sound better, they might make more money, yes, but this whole thing about if there's a reference, that means there's a precedence, but if there's a precedence, that means that there's no originality. It's a worldwide problem. Mm-hmm. I guess Singapore, because we are small, it is more pronounced.
Do you both feel like there's a certain kind of formula that you must follow to be able to make it big in Singapore, when the kinds of films that have come out in Singapore and the types of films that have been successful would be the Jack Neo sort of Our Boys to Men, or even when you think about like Ilo Ilo, right? It did not gross as much as Jack Neo's movies. What do you think?
Primarily, I'm not against production companies or independent. I think I'm someone who always try and put the story in the forefront. So it must be the right person, be it a production company, a big one or a small one. Now, I feel like we must remove any prejudice. I think a lot of filmmakers have a certain idea. Oh, Disney must make this kind of film. MediaCorp might go this direction that I don't want. But I think, especially after the pandemic and the uprising of Netflix, everybody has seen that you don't have to stick to a very particular identity. Any platform or any company can make anything, really. It's not completely like that, but we're moving towards that. Right now, I mean, I'm pitching something for MediaCorp, which I never thought I would, because I grew up as an independent filmmaker. So I never thought that MediaCorp might become a home for one of my stories. But today I'm doing it because they have a call for proposal. And I say, okay, who's the best person to make this story happen? And I'll try to be extremely impartial and not have preconceived notions affect my decision making.
I mean, what kind of pre-existing notions did you have about what kinds of films certain companies would make or wouldn't make?
Well, you just have to look at the stuff that they've made already. And you kind of look at the track record and you kind of have an idea and you compare their portfolio.
Hey, but Q, aren't you doing what you're saying that production companies do to you in making you cite precedents?
Yeah, exactly. I'm saying that that's not what we should do. We should not.
Because
today...
which you're not. Yeah,
which I'm not trying to do. Because today, with the uprising of Netflix and YouTube, a lot of people have opened their minds up. So I don't think there's any longer a particular identity. Always just try, because they may just accept a new idea and don't look at their track record and say that your story doesn't fit into their record. Actually, just create that conversation. You don't know what kind of spark might happen between you and the stakeholders.
I just want to ask, you know, given all the challenges that has happened over the past year, the challenges with filming, the challenges with pitching, and the challenges with release, would you embrace it if your kid said he wanted to be a filmmaker in Singapore? I mean, is going into film production in this challenging time a trek worth taking? What do you think?
Or even better question, should we have kids?
No.
I'm just being facetious. I'm going to quote Ang Lee on that, because Ang Lee once said to a group of young filmmakers, they were asking him for advice. Do you have any tips for being filmmakers? And Ang Lee said, don't do it. Don't be a director. And everybody, you know, the jaws were just slack. And oh my God, my hero just said that. And then Ang Lee followed up with, well, you know, but if you're going to do it, nothing I say will stop you.
Wow. Awesome.
And I thought that, you know, okay, that's that's probably a great advice.
Wow, nice. I would echo that in the same attitude, because when I teach film producing in schools and universities, that's also kind of what I say, because I will always tell them, I can offer you the pros and cons of doing it, but it's really, really up to you guys. The bottom line really is, filmmaking, like all forms of art and media, it's very, very self-driven. I mean, if you were to follow the trends and if you were to follow the references, right, and the precedents, you may not be happy. If you want to be unique and really hit at it on your own, it might be a longer road. But for me, as a trainer, as a lecturer, I will tell you both sides and then you make your own choice. It's a bit like what the actor said in Thank You for Smoking, right? If his kid wants to try a cigarette, he will actually buy a box a pack and actually light up the first Siki for him and let the kid really understand from a parent's perspective.
So choice.
Yeah, so it's choice.
What's the outlook for local movies made by local filmmakers? What do you think?
With the recent, you know, pandemic and everything, I think a lot of us went through a very, very serious, you know, thing through. Okay, what's the road ahead like? My conclusion so far is that, personally, I want to make films that not just reflect reality. I think a lot of people are doing it, and I think they are very important. But I want to start to get into a realm where we do more fantasy. So things that aren't the reality. I want to encourage people to ask the question of why not? So I want to do something right. more whimsical, more fantastical, something that we dream about, something we want to do, but never had the chance to make happen.
Okay, so it sounds like being more adventurous is definitely something you want to embark on. Yeah. How about you, Dren? Do you have any parting shots?
The Singapore film industry has always been a cowboy town, lah. If I were to sum it up, I guess I would say fortune favors the bold, right? But I think future favors the strong. We can interpret that in another session or whichever, but yeah.
There you have it, how local filmmakers have been navigating an ever-changing media landscape and thriving despite the pandemic. That was Circle Line's Dren Fu and Q Lin, director of Uncle Goose Waits, for a phone call. This has been Heart of the Matter with Crispina Robert, our podcast editor, and Erin Low, our research writer working behind the scenes. And I'm Lin Su Ling signing off.